Thank you so much for coming out. My name is Richard Campbell. Welcome to Dev Intersection / Azure Intersection / SQL Intersection. We intersect a lot of things. In fact, this is our biggest show ever. And a big thank you. And a big part of that is being able to bring together a large variety of people with different viewpoints about how to make systems work. None of this stuff is optional anymore. Our customers are, and our employers are using software not as an add-on. It's the core to most of our businesses. And that means we are core to most of the businesses that we work in today. We're not a luxury. Software is vital. And it is really important to me, making conferences, to get a chance to spend a week really thinking about what I'm doing with my career, where things are going technologically, and how I can take a step forward. Maybe not leap to the bleeding edge, but more take the tools and skills I have today and know where we can go from there. So I hope you can get that from our show. How many folks were here for the workshops the past 2 days? Wow, lots and lots of hands. Were they good? Yeah, had a good time? That's fantastic. An all-day workshop is a very different dynamic from a session. You know, that's a very intensive thing, especially if you're in Yuval's session, to spend an entire day driving on a subject. Now you're going into the buffet. We're going to have 75 and 60-minute sessions. I hope you'll go to things you didn't think you'd go to, stuff you don't necessarily know. Get a taste of the wide variety of sessions that we have over the next 3 days. And remember, we're here for you first and foremost. If a session's not working for you, feel free to move to something else. Nobody's going to be unhappy with you. That's quite all right. There's lots of housekeeping-related materials, too. Please wear your badges. It's how we know that you're supposed to be here. There's lots of things going on in Las Vegas this week, so it's important to have the right people in the right place. There's opportunities to fill in surveys to let us know how we're doing. We really need your feedback. Make sure we make the right sessions. And Mr. Guthrie has made no bones about it. He has a solid 75 minutes worth of material to do this morning, so we better give him all the time we can. So please put your hands together for Executive Vice President Scott Guthrie.
Just remembered I needed to flip my microphone on there. One last little detail. Well, thanks a bunch for coming out to the event and for the conference. There's a lot of, as Richard mentioned, a lot of just great content here this week. A lot of people from my team that are going to be doing breakout talks later today, tomorrow, and throughout the week. And I hope you have a great time really learning and really exploring some of the great technology out there. One of the things I say a lot, and I'll probably hopefully remember to say it at the end of the talk, is, you know, it's never been a better time to be in technology or to be a developer or a DBA. It's, you know, it's just the amount of change that's happening in the industry and the amount of cool innovations that are happening really are exciting. They can sometimes be scary because there's things that feel like, hey, my cheese is moving, my day-to-day job is changing. But, you know, I think ultimately there's more and more need for everyone in this room than ever before as part of this change. And one of the things I'm just going to talk about today is hopefully how the cloud can help with that change, can open up even more opportunities in terms of what you do. And hopefully you'll see with some of the demos really enable you to do some pretty cool stuff. And so I'm going to spend about 75 minutes kind of walking through, to begin with, just sort of why cloud, since I think often we jump into the what. I thought I'd just spend a little time talking about why I think the cloud is particularly interesting, and then actually walk you through some of the work that we're doing at Microsoft, in particular with Azure, and kind of showcase how you can take advantage of it for a wide variety of different things. So let's start first about why cloud. I mean, first, how many people are using the cloud today? Okay, number of hands going up. Looks like the majority still aren't. I'm just going to spend a few minutes up front talking about why cloud first, since for people that haven't used the cloud, you might be thinking, I know everyone's talking about the cloud, but what is it in there for me? Well, how does this benefit me? And you know, spend just a little bit of time talking about some of the core capabilities that the cloud brings and why it really changes your job in a fundamental new way for the better. First thing I kind of often talk to people about, and generally the feedback we get from people that adopt the cloud first and foremost, is just, wow, I can move so much faster and I have so much more agility when I'm working on projects. And you know, one example I like to talk about from an enterprise perspective is 3M, who's betting big on Azure and betting big on the Microsoft cloud. And you know, they had a situation where they build .NET. Is anyone from 3M actually in the audience before I tell your story? Oh, no one is. Great, so I can make it up. They're a large organization. They've got tens of thousands of employees. They've got thousands of products. And they're in many, many different businesses. And they're a .NET shop. They use SQL. And you know, traditionally, they've built their applications both externally but also internally for their employees, using Visual Studio and using .NET and all the standard technologies. And one of the things that they encountered about a year or two ago was they did an acquisition of a separate company. And one of the things they needed to figure out was, okay, we want to start selling their product immediately as soon as the acquisition closed. But it's a separate network. It's a separate set of infrastructure. It's a separate set of systems. It's going to take us a while to bridge our networks, to integrate all of our security controls. And you know, how are we going to enable our sales force that don't have access to their network to basically be able to sell their systems quickly? And some folks from 3M said, hey, let's see if this cloud thing really pans out, and signed up for Azure on like a Thursday. And then they basically decided, let's spend the weekend doing a hackathon and let's try to build out a sales app for mobile devices that we could arm our Salesforce with. And they basically, over a weekend, built an application on Azure that bridged between their two existing on-prem networks, so they were able to access back-end databases in both locations, provide a mobile experience for their Salesforce, and on Monday they were able to roll it out and really be the heroes of their organization, because they were able to move kind of at lightning pace in order to deliver a solution that probably would have taken them 6 to 12 months to do in their traditional way. And it wasn't perfect, and they weren't done after that weekend, but they were able to basically get something out there, and then every day or every couple hours during the day, basically push out updates to make it richer and richer, and basically get that kind of business agility that really made them true heroes within their organization and allowed them to really monetize that acquisition a lot faster. Those types of experiences of being able to move super fast, to have the ability to have just tremendous agility, are one of the top things we hear with the cloud. So rather than talk about other people, though, what I thought I'd do is actually switch to a demo. So only one slide before we dive into some code and some demos, and actually just show off a couple of common use cases that you can do with Azure in a matter of a few minutes that give you kind of a sense of that kind of agility and what it enables. So, you know, one of the most common things that people do, with the cloud, and I think sometimes people overly assume that's the primary thing you do with the cloud, is basically spin up virtual machines. And one of the things you can do with Azure super easily is spin up all different types of virtual machines. We've got built-in images for Windows Server, for Linux and Ubuntu, for SQL, for SharePoint, for Dynamics, for Oracle databases, and a whole bunch more. And so you can see, and we have a huge gallery of literally thousands of different images that you can choose from. And if you want to spin up any of these VMs, you basically just go ahead and hit create. You can very easily go ahead and bring up our little create wizard, and you basically just need to fill out your username, you know, pick where in the world you want to run it and deploy it. You can optionally set some network settings, hit create, and we'll go ahead and basically spin up this virtual machine for you anywhere in the world. And once it's up and running, you can basically go ahead and, this is one I created last night, very easily see the health of the system. We have built-in monitoring diagnostics for things like CPU, for your disk read and write, your memory usage that you can track all in the browser. We've also, you'll see a little bit later, integrated with Visual Studio and other development tools, so you don't even have to leave your IDE to create VMs and manage them. You can do it directly inside Visual Studio within the Server Explorer. And then, you know, some of the other things that we've done recently, which are kind of, you know, cool, is not only do we allow you to change your network interfaces and your disks and things like that, you can actually, this is my favorite wackadoo feature, if you click on this little new boot diagnostics icon here, we'll actually show you the boot screen of your virtual machine running somewhere around the world. You can see it says Control-Alt-Delete. So you can literally see and effectively get as close to touching that VM anywhere within the world and basically manage it. And if you ever want to shut it down, you just go ahead and hit the stop button. You no longer have to pay for it. If you no longer need it, just hit the delete button, and in about 30 seconds, it's gone. And that's sort of the agility in terms of creating, again, a Windows virtual machine. Here's another virtual machine I created earlier as well. which is a Linux virtual machine. You can see the experience is pretty much the same. You know, one thing you can also do here is not only, you know, instead of with Windows, you see the start login screen. You can even see the Linux serial output log as the VM booted up, so you can see exactly what's going on in the virtual machine. And then for both the Windows and the Linux virtual machine, you can either SSH in or RDP in directly and basically be an admin in that virtual machine and do anything you want. So that's a little bit about virtual machines. You can see it's pretty easy to spin up, pretty easy to manage. How many people here have ever created a database? How many people are here for the Retailers Association and wondering what in the world this conference is about? Okay. Have you ever created a database? How long does it take to create a database? Years, okay. Can anyone beat years? Can anyone do months? Weeks? Work with me. Days. Okay, days. How many people can do it like in minutes? Okay, got a few hands, but typically it looks like it's a little bit longer. So let's go ahead and create a database. You can, with Azure, you can create a virtual machine and host a SQL database in it, or we also have what's called a database as a service, where you don't have to worry about the virtual machine. You can just go ahead and create it. What would you like to call this database? Dev Intersections. Yeah, how many of those do you have? Looks like it's unique, which is great. I'm gonna go ahead and select where I want to put it around the world. Go ahead and create. And that was basically all that was needed for me to go ahead and basically send a command off to Azure and say, I want to create a database. I specified as part of that I could choose the size and I could resize it at a later point. Under the covers, what the portal did was it sent a REST call. So everything I'm doing through the GUI, I can also script out, or I can just even send raw HTTP commands to go do. And this is now telling, I think in the north central part of the US, Azure, please stand up a database for me of a certain size. And you know, it typically takes between about 20 and 60 seconds, usually 60 seconds when I'm doing a keynote. Once it's there, we'll see the exact same kind of user interface that you saw with virtual machines, tailored slightly for a database experience. And I can basically, at that point, start deploying things into it from Visual Studio or from the SQL Server Management Studio, and basically be able to use it just like I would with sort of a SQL Server programming model with all the core features that I've kind of come to expect and depend on as part of SQL Server. So while this thing finishes deploying, let me show you one other scenario with databases. So we talked about creating databases. How many people here have ever set up a database in a active-active scenario or in a failover scenario between one data center and another data center somewhere else within your organization? Okay, one person has. How many people know that they probably should have? You know, it's one of the things that, you know, fires do happen in data centers, floods happen, tornadoes happen, and, you know, having some ability for your organization to be able to fail over in the event of emergency is something that for any critical system, you know, most people know would be awfully nice to have. And the reality is most of us don't actually end up doing it because it ends up being kind of a pain to actually set up and manage. And for the people that set up the active-active situation, how long did it take you? Not minutes, I'm guessing. You know, it's typically 6 months is what I usually hear from most people that go ahead and set it up. In fact, one thing I'll do just before I do that is you can see that Dev Intersection database, while we were talking, finished deploying. So now it's basically completely set up and ready for me to use. Let's go ahead then and just, for kicks, go one step further here and set up Active GeoDR. And so what we're going to do here is take a database that I've already created, and I'm going to set it up, and you can click down here, this thing called Configure Geo Replication, where I can basically choose, this database is running in the north central part of the US, where in the world do I want to replicate it to so I can fail over in the event of an emergency? Since North Korea, thank you. That is one region that we're still working on activating. How about we pick South Central, Carl, since we're in Vegas? And so basically what I'm going to do is just basically pick where I want to deploy this in the world. You can see here I can pick lots of different locations. Any of those things with the green dots I can go ahead and deploy to. I'm going to go ahead and hit create. And what this is now doing is basically setting up separate database. And if I zoom in here, you might notice, if I can zoom in, that little arrow there. And this is basically now replicating my database from the north central US to the south central. It'll take a few minutes depending on the size of the database. And you know, in about, because it's a small database, in about 2 minutes, I'll now have an active database configuration set up where now I have two sites thousands of miles apart from each other, and I can at any point push a button and fail over now to the south central US, and all the data and all the transactions that I've stored in north central will be there. And then better yet, once it's set up, I can also use that second region as effectively a read secondary. So if I wanted to offload some queries or offload some reports to it, I can do that as well. So I can basically maximize the value of what I'm paying for it. And the beauty here, as you saw, basically just takes a few minutes in order to configure and set up. And you know, once it's there, I have more peace of mind, and I also have a much more flexible architecture as I'm doing it. So we've covered VMs, we've covered databases. Who here is using SharePoint? You people have. How many people here have ever set up and managed a SharePoint server farm? How easy was that? Someone's nodding their head going, oh man, that was a pain in the... Again, you know, one of the things that the cloud enables you to do is automate those types of tasks in a much easier way. And so, for example, I could go here, and in addition to creating just sort of like a dev tests SharePoint VM, I could also go ahead and create a SharePoint server farm. And so this is basically a template that will actually script out for me multiple topology. So I could basically give it a name. I can control, for example, where my domain controller sits. We actually now have a domain controller service in the cloud, so I can even attach it to a domain controller that's running as a service in Azure, or I could connect it back to an on-prem domain controller that's running behind my firewall. I can point to my SQL servers that I want to use. Again, I could point to any ones out anywhere in the world. And I can basically configure my SharePoint settings, and I can even go ahead and configure it to attach back to my corporate network if I want to enable users on my corporate network to access it in a secure way without ever going out throughout the internet. And then basically I go ahead and hit create, and this will script out for me in a complete SharePoint server farm. Here's one that I created earlier. You can see all the different machines as part of it. We have a built-in high availability option. Just checkbox, and we'll automatically pair every one of the critical nodes so you have no single point of failure. And then basically you can drill into any of these individual virtual machines. And just like you saw me manage an individual VM earlier in the demo, I can basically, by drilling into this Contoso App 1 VM, actually manage that individual web tier VM for the SharePoint server farm. You know, all in my portal, all through the command line using PowerShell or Bash scripts. And we have command line tools for both, or directly inside Visual Studio. And again, be able to do this in a matter of minutes, which gives me much more agility, and again, makes me much more effective for any of the organizations I'm working for, or enable me to kind of build much richer applications for my customers and really change the revenue dynamic of my company as well. So those are just a few simple examples. Let's flip back to the slides now. But it hopefully gives you a sense of just sort of some of the agility and the speed with which you can do a bunch of things. And obviously in the breakout talks throughout the week, we're going to talk in a lot more depth about them. And I'll show some more developer demos with some actual code a little bit later on in terms of some of the other services you use. But hopefully kind of leave you with a sense of, with just a few of those, of you can do a lot of stuff pretty fast using the cloud. And it can really help solve a whole bunch of the problems you have. Now, one of the things that's also cool about the cloud is that it's elastic. And that's another kind of characteristic that I think for a lot of people that haven't adopted the cloud, they're still wrapping their heads around. And the beauty about Elastic basically means you can spin up and spin down these resources in minutes. And so when you don't need something, just turn it off. When you do need something, turn it on. And that ability to spin up and spin down also kind of fundamentally changes how you build projects and the types of projects that you can actually deliver. These are just a couple of the customers using Azure today in a very elastic way, and they're each in different industries, and I thought I'd just tell a little story about each one. How many people have ever heard of or used AccuWeather, which is the weather service? You know, it's the popular, one of the most popular mobile apps for weather. They've got a website and a whole bunch of other experiences. They're entirely hosted on Azure, and they process about 8 billion weather requests every single day. In addition to kind of processing weather requests, the other thing that's cool is they use the cloud to basically calculate what the weather will actually be. And so they take raw forecasts and they actually use the cloud and do a whole bunch of simulations to calculate what are the next couple of days of weather patterns going to look like. And the beauty is they don't have to own a single server. They can enter new markets anywhere around the world without having to buy any infrastructure. Instead, they just spin up thousands of more cores of compute, process that weather, and they can basically, you know, enter globally any market out there. NBC is another customer of ours that uses Azure for video streaming. And they have streamed some of the largest events in the world, including the Olympics, Sunday Night Football, the Super Bowl, the Oscars, and a whole bunch more. And, you know, the thing that's nice for them is sporting events tend to be very elastic. A lot of people watch during the event, and then when the event's over, they're not watching it. And so the ability for them to spin up, in some cases, tens of thousands of compute VMs to basically process and stream video to millions of concurrent users. They can do during an event and then basically turn it off when it's not there. Not only does it save them money, but it's also enabled them to go back and look at their catalog of other sporting events. Schools, you know, say college football, where they wouldn't broadcast it on TV, but they actually have the broadcast rights. How can they now stream that also on the web? And they're now doing about 3,000 sporting events per year using Azure, again, in a completely cloud-based infrastructure. And then Milliman's another customer in the insurance space. And they basically provide what are called actuarial services to companies, like hedge funds or insurance companies. And they basically will go in, look at your portfolio, and tell you where is your risk, where do you need to hedge your investments when the market next opens, to basically make sure that you're not exposed in a bad way to a potential loss. And they basically don't have any servers. They basically use the cloud. They can go into a company, and then overnight, they'll spin up, in some cases, up to 1 million compute cores every night, run a whole bunch of risk analysis on it, and then the cool thing is, at 6 o'clock in the morning, they turn it off. And the market runs, and then basically around 6 p.m. at night, they turn it back on once the market is closed, and then they basically process it for another 12 hours and then deliver the results to their clients. And that ability to spin up and spin down and use only what you need ends up being kind of a big game changer for their business. If you think about your own business, even within your own internal applications, you know, one of the things, if you look at your typical performance monitoring metrics, you often see this type of usage. You know, a lot of your employees are probably not banging on your applications in a big way at 4 a.m. in the morning. And so you see a dip, and then during peak hours during the day is when you actually see a lot of traffic. And this kind of pattern is pretty much consistent across every type of application out there. And of course, in a traditional environment, one of the things you have to do is provision your infrastructure to basically match the peak period plus a little bit more. Because if you don't, then during the day, your apps are going to run really slow. But it means that you end up having a whole bunch of unused compute capacity throughout your data centers that you're paying for, but isn't actually being used for a whole period of time. And we find actually for most organizations, about 60 to 80% of all of the server resources they have end up being idle at some period of time. And, you know, in a traditional world where everything's running on-prem, you got to pay for it. The beauty about the cloud is you actually can auto-scale up and down your capacity to match just what you need. And the beauty about that is you're not leaving any unwasted capacity, and that translates into huge dollar savings as you actually move and adopt the cloud. Another one of our customers is a company called CarSales. Is anyone here from Australia? No one. Okay. Well, if you were, you might have heard of them. They're big in Australia. They're big throughout the Asia Pacific region. And they're kind of expanding around the world. And they basically provide classified ads for cars, for boats, and other kind of water vehicles. And one of the things that they realized in their .NET, SQL, Windows Server shop, and traditionally they had a managed hosting environment where they basically had 96 servers to run their website during their peak period of time. And they get billions of listings and billions of page views per week. And what they found, though, was that most people weren't browsing the site in the middle of the night, and they weren't even browsing the site during the morning. In Australia, typically it heats up around 2 p.m. is when the traffic surge hits. Between 2 p.m. and 10 p.m. is their peak period of time. And what they were able to do is basically take those 96 servers and scale them down to 6 servers during that non-peak period, and then basically spin it back up so that they have 96 servers during their peak. And what they found was it basically allowed them to save an entire zero off of their IT infrastructure budget by moving to the cloud. And they were able to take those savings and reinvest it in their people and actually hire more people, build out the site even faster, and be able to invest in actually driving even more revenue in terms of the organization. And so again, a great kind of type of win that we see over and over again as people adopt the cloud. And then last but not least is really enabling these new business scenarios and being able to take some of those cost savings on infrastructure and really invest in people, really invest in data and data analytics and be able to build even smarter, more intelligent apps. And some of the most exciting use cases of the cloud are scenarios that just weren't possible years ago before. We've got companies like GE Healthcare that are now offering new healthcare-based systems to hospitals and doctors all over the world, including in medical facilities where they couldn't previously put in servers because they were too remote in order to actually operate. Ford is adding in IoT sensors to every one of their vehicles going forward, streaming that data up to Azure to be able to automate and optimize the car ownership experience. And the new startups like Jet.com, you might have heard of, that they're looking to get to $20 billion in revenue by 2020, and they don't have a single server that they've bought. Instead, they're all in on Azure. They're building their entire infrastructure on Azure, and they're able to move in at lightning pace and really open up brand new scenarios. And the combination of kind of all these sort of benefits, whether it's speed and agility, elastic scale, cost savings, and then really enabling these new business scenarios, you know, can be transformative to your business and your organization, but more importantly, really makes you even more valuable as part of it. And you know, I think one of the things hopefully again you'll see throughout the rest of this talk and throughout the week is just the things that you can now do that make you much more valuable and now allow you to actually produce much more can really change, you know, both the business that you work for, but more importantly, the role you have in the business and make you even more valuable to them. So, you know, what does this typical journey of the cloud look like? You know, one of the things that we often talk to with companies is they often have, you know, sometimes they're startups and they don't have any investment in existing infrastructure. A lot of companies have lots of years of investment in code, in applications, and data. And, you know, everyone needs to figure out effectively what is the journey to the cloud end up looking like for them. And typically what we see when people look to journey to the cloud is really a combination of three things. One is taking advantage of SaaS-based solutions, things like Office 365 or Dynamics or Salesforce or other solutions we think are going to be increasingly popular. You'll see even a little bit later on in my talk, I'll talk about things where we're taking Visual Studio and also making it a SaaS service. So you can take advantage of things like build servers in the cloud and test management systems in the cloud and do it without having to spin up or even manage VMs. We expect to see people need cloud infrastructure because you're never going to have everything be in a SaaS-based world. You're always going to want to build custom applications or be able to extend those SaaS solutions. And then we also see people increasingly looking to take advantage of higher-level services like databases as a service, like analytics or BI as a service. And it's really the combination of all three of these things that really change how you operate and can really give you kind of this massive productivity win and make you even more successful as a company. And what we're trying to do at Microsoft is basically deliver all of those. With our Office, Dynamics, and Power BI solutions, we have a great set of SaaS capabilities you can leverage. And with our Enterprise Mobility Suite, we now allow you to manage it in a really easy way and to do it in a way that your employees love. And then with Azure, which is what we're going to spend the rest of this talk on, we basically provide a whole bunch of services, whether you're for a developer, whether you're working with data, whether you're doing IoT, or whether you're working with infrastructure, and allow you to compose and build these great solutions in a really rich way, and you know, really transform ultimately how you build applications and the type of applications that you build. One of the cool things about Azure is that it's global. And so these little blue circles here on the diagram represent what are called Azure data center regions. And our data center region for us is typically made up of multiple data centers, generally within the same geographic vicinity, that you can basically then deploy your applications to and run code. And so when I deployed those databases or those VMs or SharePoint server farms, I was deploying them to one of those little blue dots. And we now have 24 Azure regions around the world. Put it in perspective, that's more than AWS and the Google Cloud combined. And you know, the beauty is you can basically, when you build any solution with Azure, pick any of these blue dots and deploy it in minutes. And that ability to kind of compete globally, build solutions that run globally, you know, again, is another big differentiator for the cloud and really enables your company to move much faster and compete in more markets than ever before. I talked about elastic scale earlier, and I said, you know, you can always spin up and spin down compute. One of the reasons you can do that is each of these blue dots tends to be a fairly big facility. And so this, we don't usually show this publicly, but this is sort of an example of one of our data center regions. I think this was in Virginia, one of our east regions. And you can kind of see that little dot in the bottom right, that's a big truck. And you can kind of see in the distance there some of the data center facilities that we already have operational. And you can kind of see a little bit the size difference between the two. Gives you a sense of some of the scale in terms of the data center capacity that we have. This is another angle of that facility. And this basically shows the expansion we're building out over the next 6 months. That's 2 miles long, those arrows, those lines. And that's going to be some of the new facilities that will triple the size of this region, again, by the end of next calendar year. And that translates into probably, 300,000 or 400,000 servers in that one particular location. And remember, there's 24 of these locations around the world. That gives you kind of a sense of just the scale at which the cloud allows you to operate. And the beauty is you can spin up on as many of those servers as you want, when you need it, when you want it, and you can spin down when you don't need it. And that ability to kind of have this type of footprint that you can use, again, allows you to build solutions that just weren't possible years before, and you know, be able to tackle problems that were just sort of inconceivable in a prior world. So I talked a little bit about the hyperscale aspect that Azure has and the fact that it works, you know, all over the world and basically allows you to kind of build things anywhere. What are some of the other characteristics that make it unique? Well, some of them are basically not just that it's hyperscale, but also the fact that you can actually deploy things in a hybrid way in kind of an enterprise-grade environment. And what do I mean by hybrid? Well, one of the things that's unique about Azure and very different than, say, what AWS or other cloud vendors provide is that we embrace what you already have in a pretty deep way, and we embrace the data centers and the facilities that you already have and want to really enable an experience that allows you to build solutions that can run in our data centers but also can run in yours. And with our Azure Stack offering, which is a software offering that you can download, you can basically set up your own Azure experience in your own facility. And it has the same core base services as Azure. It has that same management portal that I just showed earlier. In fact, you can take Visual Studio and you can point it at both public cloud Azure in our data centers and an Azure Stack running in your data center. And basically, the APIs and even the deployment experience inside VS is exactly the same. And that gives you kind of much more flexibility as you build solutions and allows you to choose, hey, these things I want to deploy on-prem, these things I want to deploy in the cloud, and I want to link the two together in really rich ways. And ultimately, we think for any large company or any existing company that exists today that's not a startup, that those are the kind of capabilities you're going to need, and it gives you much more flexibility to choose at what pace do you move to the cloud as you do so. I showed earlier when I created some VMs, not just a Windows Server VM, but also a Linux VM. That's sort of an important part of what we're trying to do with Azure, which is not just enable a great Windows Server cloud, but also enable you to use the best of a much broader set of ecosystems, whether it's running on Windows or on Linux. And this slide just shows some of the different open source technologies that we support across a wide range of different things, and it's many more than that. But the cool thing is it allows you to basically use whatever tool is best for the job that you want to go ahead and deliver, and whatever you're familiar with, you know, we support inside Azure. Thing that we've always focused on at Microsoft has really been around developing, providing productivity, both for developers and IT professionals, and with tools like Visual Studio, with System Center, with PowerShell and others, how do we kind of make you super successful as you build solutions? And we're doing that with Azure. Both, again, with our technologies, but also with other technologies. We have great support for GitHub. We have great support for Eclipse. We have great support for Chef and Puppet and much more. And the beauty is you can basically choose, regardless of whether you've grown up on the Microsoft stack or you've grown up on a different stack, to be able to take advantage of Azure and really be successful with it. One of the things that you'll see in some of the breakout talks is, and I talked about earlier, is that you know, organizations want to be able to embrace SaaS as well as infrastructure and custom apps. One of the things that we're trying to do with Azure is how do we bridge those two things together? And if you've adopted Office 365 or Dynamics or Salesforce, how can you as a developer build applications that extend it, that work with the data that's stored in it, that works with the security model, that can set up workflows that span across the both in a really rich way? And we have a whole bunch of services and capabilities built into Azure that makes it easy. And then last but not least, the thing we focus with Azure a lot on is how do we win your trust? And from a compliance certification perspective, we now have more certifications than any other cloud vendor out there. That hopefully provides some peace of mind in terms of operating, but also means that you can actually meet the unique compliance needs, whether it's HIPAA for healthcare, whether it's CJIS if you're targeting the criminal justice agencies inside the U.S., whether it's EU clauses if you want to target European markets, and so forth. You know, these certifications basically provide a way that you can compete in any market with the apps you build. There we go, the slides came back. And we've seen lots of momentum across Azure as we built all these supports out. We've got 90,000 new Azure customer subscriptions being created every month. We've got more than 1.5 million databases now hosted inside Azure. We've got more than 500 million users in our Azure Active Directory system, which enables single sign-on. For IoT scenarios, we're now processing more than 1.5 trillion IoT messages per month. And then, you know, the number that is sort of most mind-boggling is, you know, basically 777 trillion storage transactions are now being processed each day on Azure and across a wide variety of different applications. And, you know, one of the things we often tell people is people say, oh, is Azure primarily being used for enterprises? You know, more than 40% of our revenue in Azure is actually not being used by companies and enterprises, but actually by startups and ISVs building solutions. And so it's a wide variety of different companies and organizations taking advantage of it. This is just a quick list of a few of the companies inside the Fortune 500 that are taking advantage of it. More than 80% of the Fortune 500 companies, in fact, now have a workload running on the Microsoft Cloud. So that's a little bit in terms of what and how at a high level. Let's dive into some more of the details and actually show off some more code. So I mentioned Azure has a whole bunch of these different capabilities in the developer space, the data space, IoT space, infrastructure, media streaming, and a bunch more. What I'm going to do here is just provide a taste of some of the different capabilities and show off some more demos here in terms of what you can do with Azure across a wide different variety of things. The first thing I thought I'd do is just dive into the developer space a little bit and show off what you can do there. So, you know, one of the things that I talked about earlier is the ability with Azure to really get tremendous agility as you're working on solutions. And we showed off, hey, I can create a VM, I can create databases, I can create SharePoint farms in a really fast way. But you can also create custom applications. So how many people here build web and mobile apps? Great. How many people here use .NET? Great. How many people here use Node.js? Great. How many people here use PHP? Great. How many people here use Python? Java. Great. Only one Java person. You must be lonely. But thank you for coming. We love you. The good news is for all of you, we've got a great solution to build and deploy custom apps. And we call it Azure App Service. And it basically has the same set of capabilities for all the languages I mentioned. So the same thing you can do with .NET, you can do with Java or PHP or Node. And it enables you to build web apps, enables you to build mobile backends for any mobile app on any platform. With our Logic App and API App capability, it lets you optionally integrate with SaaS apps in a really easy way. So if you want to pull data from Salesforce or Dynamics and integrate it as part of your app, you can do so. If you can push it back, you can integrate security models, et cetera. And what's great is it lets you do it in with any app language. So you can use all the languages I mentioned. We support auto-patching. So when you deploy your application, instead of deploying it in a VM, and having to patch and roll the VM every time you do an update. The nice thing about the app service is we do all that for you, and we run your VMs in a high availability way without you having to configure any of that. We have built-in auto-scaling capability, so you can also set up your application to automatically increase and decrease the number of VMs running with it based on the actual load that your application is receiving. And so that's a great way that you can save money when your application is not being used, and it's a great way where you can spin up capacity fast when your application starts to get hammered. And then The other beautiful thing about it is it lets you easily integrate with your existing apps, whether it's SaaS apps, whether it's your SAP system or other backend systems that are running on premises behind the firewall. And it does this in a very agile workflow way that enables you to easily set up what's called continuous deployment that allows you to kind of basically go ahead and use some of the agile best practices out there to be able to ship software quickly in a really high production way. And so if we can switch to the demo machine here. Try to log in again. Great. Let's go ahead and show off a couple demos of Azure App Service in action. I'll switch to my personal account here. And what I'm going to go ahead and do here is first of all, just create a simple web app. And then we'll go ahead and deploy, you know, a .NET app inside it. So I'm going to hit, I could create a VM, or in this case here, I'm going to create what's called a web app, which is basically using our Azure App Service. What would you like to call this web app? Silence in Vegas. Let's see if that one's taken. Oh, it's not. Good. We can choose kind of where we want to deploy it. I'm going to choose East US, and I hit Create. And this is going to go ahead now and basically provision for me a web app that I can now deploy code into from any different technology. So I can use Visual Studio, I could use Git, I could use FTP, and I can basically stand this up and deploy it and run it on the internet. So let's go ahead and go into Visual Studio here. And this is sort of a simple ASP.NET MVC application that I built. I just went new project, so it wasn't super advanced. This is literally just the default project template. What I'm going to do here is just go ahead and deploy it to Azure. And so one of the things we have that's kind of nice is built-in support inside Visual Studio. So if I go ahead, actually I might have done that too fast for you to see. Let me go ahead here. If I just right-click and hit publish inside my ASP.NET app, that'll bring up this publish dialog. And then what you can do when you bring up this publish dialog is it gives you a couple different ways that you can go ahead and deploy this application. And I can go ahead and say, I want to deploy it to Azure. If I'm not already logged in, it'll actually ask me to log in using my Azure credentials. And then we've integrated inside Visual Studio the ability to actually scan here and see precisely, you know, what are the apps that I've deployed into the web and created inside my Azure environment. And so you can see there is my Silence in Vegas app. Now the network is being shared right now, so rather than do a full deployment, I'm just going to deploy into the Scott Goo Vegas app that I've deployed a few files in earlier. And then basically I can just escape here. I'm going to go ahead and hit publish. And down here you can see Visual Studio is now automatically setting up a deployment publish endpoint. It's copying the content, ACLing it, and it's done. Opened up the browser, and what you should see in about 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, that app is loaded, and this is now running in the cloud wherever I specified. If I want to change it now, let's go ahead and change this from ASP.NET to Silence in Vegas. Right click, we'll republish. My settings are already deployed, so I don't have to re-download those settings again. Again, it's basically redeploying the new version, and the change is now live in production, running in the cloud. And that's sort of how simple it is to take an ASP.NET app inside VS, right click, publish, and basically have a solution running in the cloud in no time. Now what's cool though is when we go ahead and open this thing up. There are a couple things you can see. One is, you know, we actually will show you things like what is the actual traffic that's happening on the system. And there's, you know, about a 60-second delay. So you'll see the numbers here show up in a second here from what we just deployed. If I drill in here, one of the things that's neat about the Azure management experience is I can set up what's called an alert. And so if I wanted to, I can say, let's set up an alert on my traffic and I'm zoomed in here so people can see. I could name the alert whatever I wanted to. I could basically say, hey, I want to set it so that the average memory working set goes above a certain threshold. I want to get notified, or if I basically say, look, if we're returning, let's say, HTTP server errors, so let's say my database is timed out, or I've got a problem or a bug inside my application, and I could basically say, look, if I have more than, let's call it 10 errors over the last 5 minutes, then I'm going to say something is wrong. And I could basically say, email the administrator, or I can go ahead and configure a custom email address of someone I want to get notified to. Hold on here. Trying to scroll and zoom at the same time is harder than it looks. I can email someone if that trigger fires. Or the other thing we have now is what's called a webhook. And so if you have like pager duty, or you have kind of a pager system, or any type of SMS system that you use for alerts across your ops team, you can paste that endpoint in there. And then anytime your app throws more than 10 errors in 5 minutes, your pager duty system will kick off, and you can basically be notified that there's an error. That's how easy it is basically to configure and set up that type of environment. And you can do it again for any type of metric. And in fact, you can now see there's the traffic. It looks like not just me, but someone else in the audience has found this URL. And my app is now going ahead and getting hit. Other things you can do in terms of the Azure App Service model that makes it kind of cool is you can scale up and scale down the amount of capacity that you're using as part of your environment. And so you just click the scale button here on your settings tab, and it'll show that right now I have one instance of a VM running to basically service this application. And the beauty about App Service is it's spinning up the VM for you automatically, patching it anytime there's an OS patch that comes out, so you don't have to do that. And then I can basically choose, hey, let's run three VMs. If I hit save, basically within seconds, I now have three VMs that my application is running across, and that's how easy it is to scale up or scale down. Now what's cool is you can also, instead of just sort of increasing or decreasing it based on kind of a single account, you can also go ahead and say, I want to change it based on CPU percentage. And so in this case here, I'm going to say I want to have between 1 and, let's call it 7 VMs. And I basically want to have keep the VMs between 20 and 62% CPU range. What this means is if I just have, you know, low amount of traffic, I'll just have one VM. If the traffic on that VM ever goes above, or the usage of the VM ever goes above 62% of capacity, it'll just automatically add a second VM to the system. If combined they go above 62%, we'll add a third, up to 6, or up to whatever I configured, 7. And then if the CPU ever starts dropping below 20%, we'll start turning them off and helping you save money. And so you can basically specify any rules you want there. And if you want to be even fancier, you can set up different times of the day to do it. So you can basically pick your peak periods and scale up before them and scale down after them. All that is pretty easy to configure. And then to make it go live, just hit the save button. And, you know, it takes about 5 seconds, and then it's done. And so now I basically have an auto-scale rule set up for that application that's going to be able to manage it. Other things that App Service gives you, how many people here are set to doing continuous deployment from like a continuous integration or a build server environment with their projects? How many people here wish they could or wish they had set up? Yeah, more people. Great thing that's in Azure App Service is continuous deployment is built in. And so one of the things you can do is you can actually set it up. So you can go off to a variety of different locations. You can deploy from Visual Studio Online, which I'll talk about in a second, which provides kind of a build environment in the cloud. You can go deploy from GitHub or Bitbucket, if you like GitHub or Mercurial for your deployments. You can point to external repositories, to any Git or Mercurial-based repository outside. You can even go ahead and deploy through, you know, OneDrive and Dropbox if you just want to literally copy your files over as your deployment mechanism. That's not typically the most best practice way to do it, but we find actually for a lot of agencies where they have people that are working on content that are images, that's actually a really easy way if you just have an image-based site to have someone in an art department be able to copy over without them having to necessarily learn source control. But anyway, all those options are available, and the beauty is it's pretty easy to set up. You basically just click whichever one you want, and then basically just configure and point to that location, and in a matter of literally a minute or two, you can set up continuous deployment so that any time a successful build completes, you deploy it into Azure. You know, last two features just to call out while I have here is one is called deployment slots. So you might say, gosh, I don't know if I want every deployment that I do to auto deploy into the cloud. With a deployment slot feature, you can actually create what's called a deployment slot inside Azure. So you might have, for example, your production and your staging environment. And you could have, every time a successful build happens, automatically deploy the output into a staging environment. You can test it and hit it with a private URL, and then you can automatically swap it into production, assuming everything works. All that's built into the system. You can automate it in a completely easy way using this environment. And then last but not least, and there's a lot more features I'm not actually talking about, is the ability to integrate into an existing networking environment. And so if you have systems back in your existing corporate network, your SAP system, other systems, you can set up what's called a virtual network between Azure and between your existing corporate network, and you can allow this server or this application you're running in the cloud to access in a secure way any resource that you choose to give access to and lock it down and have all the security credentials and security monitoring built in for you to have that protection. And again, the beauty is you can actually configure all this and a couple of clicks through the portal. And then more importantly, everything you do through the UI, you can also automate from the command line or basically create a declarative template that you can use to always kind of implement best practices and have a consistent set of standards that you can use across your organization. So that's pretty much how easy it is to take advantage of Azure App Service and, you know, again, some of the productivity benefits it brings. So let's go back to the slides now and talk about some of the other things you can do with it. So I mentioned this continuous deployment aspect, and you know, a number of people raised their hand when they said continuous deployment. It's kind of one of the best practices, continuous integration and continuous deployment, are some of the best practices in the agile kind of community in terms of how do you ship continuously, iterate in a fast way, and be able to get feedback and course correct as opposed to doing kind of giant projects that can take a while and then end up having a giant integration cost at the end in order to go live. And one of the things that we're trying to do, both with Azure and then also with the service that we have called Visual Studio Online, is make it really easy to set up those types of agile development environments and enable you to fall into what I call the pit of success when you're working on projects as opposed to the pit of failure, and really enable you to kind of set up best practices that you can use. And one of the things we've done with Visual Studio Online is we've delivered it as a SaaS service. So in other words, you don't have to spin up any virtual machines in order to run it. You can literally sign up. There's a free sign up for up to 5 users. You can have private repos at no cost. So if you want to have a private code repository, you can sign up and use it with Git or TFS using Visual Studio Online. And then the beauty is you can check in code from any machine. So it can be a Windows machine running .NET. It can be a Mac machine running Node.js. Or an Eclipse IDE on Ubuntu, just using standard Git protocols. And then what we've done basically inside Visual Studio Online is provided rich tools so you can see not only the changes you've checked in, but things like code diffing support and project work item tracking and agile management tools are all built in directly as part of the service. We've also then built in what are called build server support. So if you want to set up a rule so that anytime someone checks in code, you can automatically kick off a build and we'll basically, and then run unit tests against the completed build if it succeeds, all in an automated way. And the beauty is you don't have to buy any infrastructure to do it. It's really easy to basically configure and set this up. And you can set this up even whether you're using the code repository and checking the code into Visual Studio Online. But if you have, for example, a GitHub account or a Mercurial account somewhere else, you can actually have the build server go against that as well. So that even works even if you're not ready to store your code using Visual Studio Online. And basically what we've enabled here is a pretty easy way that you can set up build pipelines. You can now go ahead and very easily just click Add Task or again script it all out. And you can basically choose from a wide variety of build tasks and create build pipelines that will run anytime a check-in happens, or you can manually kick it off as well. And you can see there's tasks here. So I showed you earlier a .NET build pipeline with MS Build. You know, here's a Java pipeline that's using Maven and Ant and other things that are popular in the Java development community. Here's one that's using Android and basically taking advantage of things like Android code signing, which is a service that we actually offer as part of our build service. So you can actually build even both Mac or both iOS and Android apps using our build service, sign them, and actually even get them ready to deploy into an app store all in a continuous way. Load testing is something that I think everyone that's ever gone live with any service or any application wishes they probably had tested more before they went live. And you know, oftentimes, you know, how many people have ever gone live with something, it works great in testing, and then people start complaining it's really slow once it's there? Oh, a lot of people are not being brave. Most of you probably have been in some way, shape, or form through that experience. And it's hard, because it's hard to simulate what a real user is going to do with your application. One of the things we have built into the service now is what's called load testing. And so you can actually create a load testing pattern directly in Visual Studio, publish it to Visual Studio Online, and then basically you can simulate up to 250,000 users hitting your service using whatever traffic pattern you want, and basically get the results back of, did it fall over? What was the latency? What was the average performance as it was under load? And you can basically use that to decide, are you ready to go live? And you can even automate it so that every time someone does a check-in, you do the build, you run your unit tests, you do a load test, and only if it passes all of those criteria are you ready to consider deploying into a staging environment and going live into production. That's all built in as a service. You don't need to build out or stand out any servers in order to do it. And then the most recent service we're also offering as part of it is release management. So if you want to be able to do coordinated management of your QA environment, your staging environments, your production environments, built into Visual Studio Online is support to do all of that and allow you to basically manage and coordinate it in a really rich way. And then once you go live, we've also built in something called Application Insights that basically give you diagnostics around how is the application holding up. Are you seeing any errors? And we actually even capture any .NET errors that are happening inside your app. We're also doing it for Java, for iOS, Android, and others. And basically, we'll upload the stack traces to the analytics system so you as a developer can see exactly what are the exceptions people are hitting. You can look at what are the traffic load, what type of browsers or operating systems or mobile devices are using my application. And you can drill in and see both the server experience in terms of performance, but also the latency the clients are experiencing, all in an integrated way. And the ability to stand up this sort of environment, again, in a few minutes, automate your entire build process, enables you not only to build better apps, but be able to do it in a continuous way. And so the beauty is, you get more data, you check in a fix or you check in an improvement, it flows throughout the entire pipeline, you get more data based on that, and then you just continue and repeat that process over and over again. Enables you to build much better applications, much more robust applications. And what you'll find is it actually makes development a heck of a lot more fun because it takes away a lot of the grunt work in terms of trying to figure out why isn't this thing passing? We haven't run our tests in 3 weeks. Now they're failing. Who checked in what? You can now automate that completely and enable a much better team environment as you do work on it. In the cases I showed here, I was primarily talking about a cloud-based application being deployed. The other thing that's worth calling out about Visual Studio Online is it doesn't just work for cloud-based apps. You know, you saw me talk about mobile apps with iOS, Android, and Windows. Obviously, it works there as well. But you can even deploy applications using Visual Studio Online back to an on-prem environment, whether it's with Azure Stack or something like VMware or some other hosted environment using System Center. You can basically use this environment and use the cloud regardless of whether the ultimate application runs in the cloud or runs, again, on the existing servers and environments that you already have. So that's a little bit about applications. Let's switch gears now and talk a little bit about data and some of the things you can do with data as well with Azure as well. I talked earlier about the SQL database service, and we showed kind of creating a database and setting up the GeoDR recovery capability with it. SQL database as a service is just one of many, many database services and data capabilities that we have inside Azure. And it's a particularly popular one. But we also have things like a Redis cache. So if you want to stand up a Redis node, you can do that. We have a NoSQL as a service if you want to have a JSON-based document store. We've got services for NoSQL. We've got Hadoop clusters. We've got BI services, machine learning, stream analytics, and a whole bunch more. What I thought I'd do is just talk not about storing data, since we already showed a few SQL database demos, but instead switch gears and talk about how do you use the data that you've already stored to build more intelligent apps. And you know, one of the things that you know, I think the cloud enables, and really, you know, beyond the cloud, you know, even just in the data space that's happening more and more, is not just storing data for kind of transactional scenarios, but also how are we as developers and as data administrators, weaving in the notion of analytics into a deeper way of our core workflow. And so in other words, how do we get insight from the data that we've actually stored as opposed to just simply storing it? And increasingly, we see people moving from, or wanting to move from figuring out kind of what happened to understanding why did it happen, to understanding what will happen in the future, and then be able to calculate and figure out what should I do based on that insight, and what action can I actually go ahead and take based on that. And when you can enable that inside your organization, you can really unlock some amazing insight and some amazing business results, because you can not only calculate this customer is likely to churn because of these criteria, but you can actually then build out a solution, for example, with Azure App Service, that helps you reach out to that customer and prevent them from churning. And building those types of systems can have dramatic impact in terms of your organization. And what we're doing basically with Azure is building a whole bunch of services in our data space that give you the ability to get that unique insight and to really kind of drive the analytic capabilities in a much bigger way within your applications. And the flexibility and the agility of the cloud to move quickly as you do it is really a game changer in terms of what you can deliver. One of the services that we've built out that I think Steve Guggenheimer demonstrated last night for people that were at his keynote is a service called Power BI. How many people have used Power BI? Few people have. If you haven't, it's worth checking out. You go to powerbi.com and you can sign up in about 10 seconds, and it's free, and you can do lots of cool stuff with it. And basically what it lets you do is it provides a whole bunch of rich business intelligence capabilities. It lets you do live dashboards in the cloud. So you can take any data, whether it's stored in a SQL database or in a Hadoop database or in Salesforce or Dynamics or any SaaS-based app, and basically create rich reports on top of it. For developers here in the room, both Visual Studio Online and GitHub, we have content packs for both. So you can actually, if you just want to actually get immediate insight, point to your existing Visual Studio Online or your existing GitHub project account, and we'll actually show you check-ins, failures, code quality, a whole bunch of metrics as a dashboard out of the box built in. In addition to having web-based dashboards, it also has mobile apps. So you can actually access any of the dashboards you create on a phone, not just Windows phones, but also iOS and Android. You can connect to on-prem data. So it has a gateway connector to any SQL server. So if you've got an existing SQL server running on-prem, you can connect to it. And even if you're using BI in the cloud, all your data can stay behind the firewall inside your existing system. And we also support things like streaming IoT data in real time and allow you to move that as well. What gets powerful is when you marry this sort of visualization capability with the ability to store and do analytics processing using a cloud-based platform. And so one of the other cool services I'm going to demo in just a second is our SQL Data Warehouse service. How many people here have ever stood up a data warehouse before? A few people have. How long did that take? A while, yeah. Typically, data warehouses, maybe 6 to 12 months is a typical data warehouse journey, because it takes a lot of hardware, it takes a lot of configuration, it takes a lot of testing in order to go live with it. One of the nice things about the cloud is you can now stand up a SQL data warehouse in about 5 minutes. And what's great about it is it can scale to work from a couple hundred gigabytes of data to petabytes of data. And you can basically dynamically scale up and scale down that data warehouse in seconds across those levels. So it makes it really, really easy and really, really fast to work with it. What's great is once you have a data warehouse, you can interactively query and visualize any data that you stick in it. And we can scale out the compute across hundreds or thousands of compute cores running across Azure, so it ends up being really, really fast. And then you can also what's called operationalized machine learning. So not only can you store and query data, but you can also learn from that data and basically expose APIs that you can call from within your applications that make your apps even richer. So let me show you an example of kind of what you can do here. So one of the things you can do very easily, we showed earlier the Azure App Service and we built a simple web app. I could put a SQL database behind it as a service, and this is kind of your typical traditional web or mobile backend style environment for a lot of the applications used today. What's cool is you can also then stand up now a data warehouse as a service and set up a job that basically says, I want to go ahead and pull the data from my database into my data warehouse. And what I can do, you might say, well, why do I need two? Well, you know, the thing that's nice about a data warehouse is not only are you storing what is the state of your data today, But you can actually then look at what was it looking like last week, last month, last year. And you can do what are called aggregate queries across it to get deep insight in terms of actually how is your business changing? Is your churn going up or down? And you can do queries that would sort of kill your typical relational database. You can do in a data warehouse in a very easy way and be able to do it without impacting your production apps. And what's great is you can pull the data really easily from a SQL database, but you can pull it from any other database, from an Oracle database, from a DB2 database. You could pull it from a Hadoop cluster, either on-prem or in the cloud. You could pull it from your SAP system or your Dynamics system or any other on-premise assets that you already have. And you can set these up in a completely automated way. So instead of manually doing it, you can instead just have an information production workflow that automatically does it continuously as the data changes. And then once you have that, you can point Power BI against it and get rich dashboarding against any of that data. You can go ahead and create reports using Excel or any other report creating tool you want and generate reports. And then you can also create what's called machine learning models, where you take that data and you actually use statistics to calculate based on this set of criteria, how can I predict what will happen in the future in a similar case? And I can then expose those APIs back to my application, and I can embed and use those APIs inside my web and mobile apps to make my apps smarter. And setting all this stuff up is super easy. And let's go ahead and see a demo of how it works in action. So we can switch back to the demo machine now. Let's go back to that account I used earlier. For my personal projects and for web and mobile and database demos, I usually use my personal account. When I'm spinning up thousands of compute cores, I like to use a company account. Because when you forget to turn them off at the end of a demo, it can be quite expensive. And what I can go ahead and do here is, in the same way, so I'm back in the management portal, the same way that I could create that SQL database that we created earlier, notice here there's a SQL data warehouse option that I can use. And so if I wanted to create, you know, SQL DW in Vegas, I could create it. You can see here I can choose basically how much compute performance I want. So I can have a minimal data warehouse. I can choose kind of where do I want to deploy this. So I'll just deploy it over here in the West US. And then you can basically go ahead and either have a blank database, in which case you just import all your data, or for people that are trying out data warehouse for the first time, we also have a nice sample database, your good old AdventureWorks, that you can use as well. And then basically I'm just going to provide password, hit create, and I'm done. And that's now provisioning for us a SQL data warehouse in the western half of the US with a sample database pre-configured in it. And this will take probably 2 or 3 minutes. This is what it's going to look like once it's deployed. Is basically very similar to the management experience you saw for databases, VMs, and app services. I got a nice diagnostics view that I can see what my query activity looks like. If I want to scale it up or scale it down later, it's easy to do so. So I can just use the slider in order to actually scale up or scale down how much capacity I need. If I hit save, it just takes about a minute or so in order to actually rescale and resize the database. I get full auditing support and I get full encryption support for any of the data I put in it. And then the beauty is, if at any point I no longer need this data warehouse, I just pause it. So one of the things that we often hear from people is, you know, I really need a data warehouse at the end of the month, or I really need it at the end of the quarter, the end of the year, when I want to run a job to see how we've done. I don't want to have to keep this data warehouse running constantly if I'm not running queries against it. Again, the beauty is I can just scale it down, or I can literally just pause the data warehouse and the billing stops, and then I just turn it on when I actually need it and actually are running reports against it. Again, a nice aspect of the cloud. And then what you can see here is I have two buttons, one called Open in Visual Studio, which would allow me to open up and use the SQL management tools and the SQL development tools inside Visual Studio to run custom reports and create custom reports against this data warehouse. Or you'll also notice there's a button here called Open in Power BI. And when I click that, this basically will automatically hook me up in terms of Power BI. And this is Power BI here in a separate tab. And basically allows me to see a dashboard of all the different data types that are within my data warehouse or being pulled from anywhere else around the web. One of the cool things about Power BI is it allows me to aggregate data from all types of different sources. So for example, I can upload files. Like if I just have an Excel file or a comma separated file, I can do that. If I want to connect to a database, like a SQL database on-prem, I can do that, or my data warehouse here. But the other nice thing here is I can also just connect to any SaaS service that I'm already using. And so you can see here, we've got things like Azure Audit Logs, if you want to look at your audit history. We have GitHub, if you want to look at your project check-ins. We've got Google Analytics, if you want to be able to monitor traffic on your website and you're using Google Analytics. Dynamics CRM, or Salesforce, if you want to actually see your CRM data, and a whole bunch more. And so basically, a whole bunch of these built-in connectors, you can connect to any of them, click Connect, and then basically this will just slurp the logs in, and within usually about 30 seconds, you'll actually have a full dashboard view on top of your data. This is sort of an example view of what one might look like, and then you can kind of drill into any of these into a report and actually see a nice report view of that data in more depth, customize however you want. And what's cool is, in this case here, I built last night a simple set of reports based on that data warehouse. And so if I go here, pull in my filter, click edit report, you can see here I can create and customize any of the reports. And so I actually am not that familiar with VentureWorks, but in theory, if I go ahead and say sales by customer, I should be able to, copy that. Or I can say customer year, I can say gender, I can say sales amount. And if I wanted to, I can customize pretty much any view I want on top of this report. I can go ahead and visualize it in a wide variety of different ways, and basically setting up my report. And the beauty about this, and of course I picked apparently a few dimensions that, see if I can come up with a pretty visual here. It looks more impressive than bar charts. Apparently not. Anyway, I can go ahead here, if I picked the right set of data that was pretty, I could have a prettier report. Oh, that's good for our business. But you get the sense here, you can customize it however you want. The cool thing here is I am doing all the computation against this report in that data warehouse. And so the data that I'm doing this against could literally be petabytes in size or hundreds of terabytes in size. And I'm not going to kill my report designer because I'm pushing it back into my data warehouse in a fully audited way, in a fully secure way. So also I can make sure that my data isn't being abused. And then when I'm done, I can basically just save this report. So it's now been saved. And if I wanted to, I could even go ahead and pin, there's a little pin tile on here. And it's going to say, okay, where do you want to pin this report? I could go ahead and say, hey, let's add it to my sales rep, to an existing dashboard. Hit pin. And now if I go back to my sales rep dashboard, you can see there is my particular view here of my data pinned. And if I want to, I could go ahead on any of my dashboards and aggregate data from multiple things. So I could look at my CRM pipeline, my order history from my data warehouse. I can even see my using Google Analytics, my web traffic to my websites, and I can now have a kind of unified view across all the data across my apps, third-party apps, and existing on-prem apps, all in one location. And I can then go ahead and share this with anyone inside my organization. And so there's a nice little share button here that I can click. And I basically just give the email addresses of anyone inside my organization, hit share, and they'll now have access to this dashboard, all in a secure way using my existing enterprise Active Directory credentials. So a very easy way that you can work with data, again, pull it from any source, and be able to kind of make data really come alive in a much richer way. So we switch back to the slides. It's a little bit about data. Last thing I'll just touch on briefly is infrastructure. Jason Zander is going to go into a lot more detail on infrastructure later in the week, but you can see here this is probably the segment of Azure that has the most features and most capabilities, so I'm not going to be able to do it full justice in 2 or 3 minutes, but Jason will go into much more depth on it in his Thursday keynote. But one of the things that's great about Azure is just the fact that you can run pretty much anything using that infrastructure. We've got, as you've seen in some of the demos, a nice end-to-end management experience. with a single unified portal now that lets you manage everything. All of that is backed using a role-based access control architecture. So you can basically provide access to different people in your teams and say, here's what you can do, here's what you can create. There's full auditing support, so you don't have to worry about who deleted the VM. Well, you might still need to worry about who deleted the VM, but at least with auditing support, you'll know who actually did it. And again, with role-based access control, you can set up a rule so that person can't delete it in the future. And we have now an integrated billing API, so you can also take your billing data from Azure and automatically do things like chargebacks to your different departments or your team members, so you also always know what you're spending and be able to have good control limits set on that. With things like our premium storage offering, as well as some of the new VM tiers that we've created, you can now run some of the largest workloads in the public cloud using Azure. With our storage drives now on our VMs, we can now drive up to 80,000 disk IOPS per second, which is a lot of IOPS. I think it's the biggest in the public web. And you can scale to up to 64 terabytes of storage on each virtual machine that you store, up to petabytes or even exabytes in size of total storage. And with our VM sizes, we now have VMs that let you run, for example, half a terabyte of RAM. Using the latest Intel processors. We just announced our new N-series of VMs, which allow you to run GPU-accelerated VMs if you want to have graphics processing or doing massive quant capabilities. And again, the beauty of all these things is you can stand them up and create them in literally minutes. And then the last thing I'll just kind of touch on in terms of what we're trying to do with Azure, I mentioned hyperscale, hybrid, productivity. We're also really trying to provide an enterprise-grade experience that you can use to trust to run your business and run your applications. And we know one of the key things that's top of mind for anyone right now is around security and how do you build really secure environments in order to do that. And one of the things that we've just announced, and it's in private preview right now, it'll be available for everyone to use in just a few weeks, is our new Azure Security Center. And what this allows you to do is basically for any of the solutions you build in Azure, including everything that I've shown here so far today, you can now gain security reports and gain security visibility on top of those applications and know exactly what the threat environment and what the risks are for running those applications in the cloud. It integrates with a whole bunch of different security vendors out there, so you can run Barracuda firewalls or F5 firewalls or Cisco security capabilities and integrate it as part of your environment. So if you already have a security best practice inside your IT organization, you can use the exact same vendors that you already work with today. And the nice thing about it is, just like you saw with the rest of our management portal, you can bring up what we call Blade that'll show you your environment and basically pinpoint what are risks that we see in terms of what you've exposed in it. In other words, do you have an IP address that's not being protected by an application firewall? Do you have passwords that aren't being rotated in an often enough way? Do you have keys that haven't been changed in 2 years? We'll basically flag that, and then basically we provide a set of guidance in terms of how to protect and how to defend yourself against it. And then once your application is running, we now do automatic security monitoring for you. We can tell you, for example, if someone is doing a denial of service attack against your website, where they're coming from and how they're trying to do it. We can look and tell you someone is trying to do a password attack, brute force attack against one of your systems. And basically, we can automatically alert you to it, both within our management portal, but we also integrate within existing security tools as well that you might already be using on-prem. So if you already have an existing security IT team, it'll just light up in the dashboard of the tools that they already take advantage of, whether it's a Microsoft tool or whether it's a third-party security tool as well. And this is just, again, an example of another one of the built-in services and capabilities that we're looking to build that enable you to build even more secure and more robust applications. And then last but not least, just to highlight again the hybrid capability, all the stuff I showed here, great thing is it works in the cloud. You don't have to buy a server, and you can move super, super fast. But again, we recognize that pretty much every environment out there has a huge data center of existing apps and portfolio that's going to take an awful long time to migrate to the cloud, or maybe never will migrate to the cloud. And with our Azure Stack offering, that's where we basically allow you to take the same goodness that I've talked about here this morning, same management portal, same core management APIs, it has app service, it has SQLDB, it has VMs, and you can run it in your own data centers on the servers you already own and have a consistent experience that then allows you to have teams that can basically build and deploy solutions both in your data center and in ours in a completely consistent way. And that's going into preview, I think, next month, and you'll be able to take advantage of that, again, on any existing hardware that you already own. So there's lots of stuff I kind of covered here today, and sort of it's sort of amazing how much stuff is now in Azure, so it's kind of hard in just 75 minutes to cover it all, but hopefully give you a taste of just some of the capabilities of what you can do with it. There's obviously a lot more breakout talks available here throughout the week where you can learn a bunch more. If you're an MSDN customer, how many people here are MSDN subscribers? One of the cool things about MSDN is every MSDN subscriber gets free Azure credits, minimum of at least $50 per month of Azure credits, which means you can go and create an app service, you can go and create a VM, you can go and create SQL databases, run them in the cloud without having to enter a credit card to sign up to Azure, without having to pay anything with zero risk. And so you can do that directly using the Live ID if you have one that's already been assigned to you. We also now support Active Directory IDs as well, so if your company buys MSDN licenses, talk to whoever bought them, and they can allocate out an ID and keep track of it. And so both those options are now available. Visual Studio Online, similarly, anyone can sign up for, not just MSDN subscribers, but anyone else as well. And if you're not an MSDN subscriber, obviously you can try out Azure as well. And we have a free $200 30-day trial that you can use to get a sense of what you can do with it. Every demo that I've shown here today, you can do yourself right now using the exact same public bits. And so, you know, I'd encourage you, give it a try, try it out. I think you'll find there's a lot of great things you can do with it. And, you know, I want to say again, thank you for coming to this event. I hope you have a great time throughout all the sessions and talks. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what you build with all the great technology that's out there. Thanks a bunch.